debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. So Liz Truss, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, has now backed down on her doing away with the 45% income tax bracket for the morbidly rich in the United Kingdom. I'm not even sure it's the morbidly rich. I mean, it's people making over $150,000 a year, that which would be, you know, the merely well off, I suppose. But in any case, she has said, OK, we're not going to do it. Give up. And the markets have rewarded the pound. It's back up. It's gone up substantially. She's, you know, this tax rate, scrapping that top tax rate would not have caused that much money, but it was kind of the principle of the thing. I really think that what we're seeing here, I mean, keep in mind, Margaret Thatcher began this madness in a big way, being the first national leader to fully, officially, enthusiastically, and explicitly embrace neoliberalism. That what we are seeing now is the death of neoliberalism. Now, she is also, you know, in addition to saying that she was going to cut that top tax rate in order to essentially pay for it, to pay for that top tax rate, she was going to do what Republicans don't do. You know, the two Santa Claus theory here in the United States specifies that Republicans cut taxes and run up debt, but they wait until there's a Democrat in office to yell and scream about the debt and force the Democrat to cut the social programs. Which is exactly what Bill Clinton did. You know, he just walked right into it. Reagan set it up. Judah Wininsky actually laid it out in 1977 in the Wall Street Journal. Here's how it should work. Reagan did it for 8 years, tripled the national debt in 8 years, took us from less than $1 trillion to over $2.4 trillion, and didn't cut anything. Spent like a drunken sailor, ran up the national debt. Everybody thought, wow, he knows how to make an economy hot. Well, hey, I can show you what it looks like to live large, too. Just give me a credit card with a $1 trillion limit on it. But what Liz Truss was going to do was not wait for the Labor Party, the progressives, to come into office and then scream about how they had to cut back on, for example, the National Health Service. She was going to do it herself. Her plan included a $13 billion reduction in national insurance and a $17 billion plan to reverse a corporate tax increase. And those things she has not yet spoken to. So the United Kingdom, the folks in the UK are holding their breath. You know, what's going to happen with that? A lot going on in the world, as you might have noticed. We will be talking about as we continue through the program. Nearly two-thirds of a million Americans, Floridians, are still without power. A sad testimonial to the state of our grid-based, kind of hub-and-spoke, mostly based on fossil fuel power system. However, there was one community in Florida, just 12 miles northeast of Fort Myers, which got wiped out. This community, however, didn't lose a single house and didn't lose power, didn't lose electricity, didn't get flooded. Yeah, well, their streets got flooded. Their houses didn't. There's a story there, too. And right now, their community center and their public school are, you know, sheltering people from nearby Fort Myers and other communities. What's the deal with Babcock Ranch? I'll tell you about that in just a moment. Also, why did Ron DeSantis wait to respond to the hurricane? This is a question a hell of a lot of Republicans in Florida. A lot of people in Florida are now saying, what? He knew on Sunday this was going to hit us this hard, and he waited until Tuesday to issue a mandatory evacuation order? And then finally, how far will the Supreme Court have to go before Congress finally says, okay, you guys, that's enough. We're on to your game. No more. We're going to change the dynamic here. Congress has the power to do this. What's it going to take? I have some theories. We'll talk about all those things in the first hour. In the second hour of the program, Michael Cohen is going to drop by. I wanted to talk to him about what it's like being the consigliere for a mob family, basically. I find this absolutely fascinating, and I think it's one of the aspects of the whole Trump presidency for which there is not anything close to an appropriate amount of discussion. We'll talk about that. Also, how OPEC is planning to manipulate our midterms. Yeah, Russia and Saudi Arabia specifically. I'll tell you about that in the second hour of the program. We have evidence. Actually, it's going to happen on Wednesday of this week. I'll tell you all about that in the second hour. And is Liz Truss backing down? She's just said she's going to, you know, postpone her doing away with the top tax bracket in the UK. And the markets seem to have responded favorably. But there's a few other programs she doesn't seem to be backing down on. We'll do a deep dive into that in the second hour, at the end of the second hour of the program, or in the second hour, in the second block of the first half of the second hour. And in our third hour, the Kremlin, Carlson, Fox, Russian news feedback conspiracy loop exposed. This is an amazing story. And I have a geeky science for you. Can hugs save you or heal you from a heart attack? Seriously. It has to do with this magical chemical called oxytocin. But let's start out. Why Babcock Ranch survived Hurricane Ian, but other Florida cities didn't? And this is pretty breathtaking. You know, first of all, you've got this story that Governor DeSantis was informed on Sunday that the hurricane was going to produce this kind of damage. But he waited Sunday, he waited Monday, and finally on Tuesday, he ordered an evacuation. And by that point in time, it was too late for most people to get out. And, you know, so now they're finding bodies all over the place. But there's another story, I mean, that's kind of a sad, not kind of sad, that's a tragic story. But there's another good news story out of Florida. It's about this little town 12 miles south, northeast of Fort Myers. Fort Myers, of course, got wiped out. Many dead, total loss of power, total loss of water, other utilities. But this community came through the hurricane just fine. They never even lost power. What's the deal here? Babcock Farms was started in 2015 as a 100% solar community. They have over 700,000 solar panels that produce so much electricity that this community of 2,000 homes, and that's, you know, the size of a small city, right? This community of 2,000 homes, or the small town anyway, never lost electricity, never lost their lights, and they still have plenty of electricity. This started in 2015, and the guys who got together to do this, the people who got together to create Babcock Farms, were not a bunch of old hippies looking for, you know, hey, let's live off the grid. The solar farm, in fact, that largely powers their community was built by Florida Power and Light in a joint public-private partnership. And this is an area that regularly votes red, votes Republican. They are not save the world hippies. What they are people who recognize that in 1970, solar power was $80 a watt. In 2010, it was $6 a watt to install. The panels were around $2 a watt. And today, solar power it was $6 a watt then. Today, it's around $1.40 a watt, and the panels themselves are 38 cents a watt. That's a big drop. Solar and wind are now the cheapest way to produce electricity in the United States, bar none, which is why a 250,000 Americans today earn their living designing and maintaining and installing solar power. And Babcock Ranch did this. Their homes are, you know, have solar roofs. Their community has a giant solar farm. They also, they built planning for the flood, which we just got. They built with the streets are lower than the houses. You know, typically your house is just a little bit above the street. Well, here they're substantially above the streets. And the streets were designed specifically to flood. They were intended to flood, and thus the streets, you know, drained right into a drainage system that ultimately led back out to the ocean. This is called resilience. And as Florida is looking at the need to either build back hundreds of thousands, or at least certainly tens of thousands of homes, perhaps hundreds of thousands, and definitely, you know, build new housing for new people, you know, for people who have been displaced, Florida should be looking at this. Now, this is not a brand new idea, this idea of, you know, solarizing communities. Back in 2009, I was a speaker in Barcelona, Spain, along with Hermann Scheer. Hermann Scheer was a member of the German parliament, and he had introduced what was called the 100,000 rooftop program. And it was a really simple program. Basically, what the deal was the power companies in Germany needed to build a new power plant. But they didn't want to build nuclear power plants because Chernobyl had just melted down, and they, you know, everybody in Germany, this was back in the 80s, everybody in Germany was horrified. And so Hermann Scheer came up with this plan where if you owned a home, the bank would loan you enough money to solarize your house at a very, very low interest rate. And the banks, these bank loans would be backstopped by the government, so there was no risk to the banks, so they could offer a low interest rate. The utility, instead of having to spend hundreds of millions of dollars building a whole new plant, would instead, for the period of time that you had that loan on your solar roof, would pay you for the electricity you were feeding into the grid enough money to cover your monthly payments. So the utility is basically helping pay people to put solar on their roofs so that they don't have to build another nuclear power plant. It's actually cheaper than building a power plant. Everybody wins. All the risk is taken by the government, but the government is not having to shell out large quantities of money up front. It's just they're just taking the risk. This is being done by the banks and the utility companies. And sure enough, his 100,000 rooftop program has turned into, you know, over a million solar roofs. In fact, they had to upgrade their electric grid recently to deal with this incredible surge in electricity coming from solar houses. There was a couple of weeks this last summer where 100% of the electricity in Germany was provided by this program. 100%. The trains, the planes, well, not the planes, the trains, the buses, the subways, the trams above ground, everything. We can do this here. In fact, MIT noted that Germany avoided pumping 74 million metric tons of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere just in 2009. And they created 300,000 new jobs. We need to build a resilient America. We need to start with Puerto Rico and Florida. And we can start right now. This is not rocket science. This is, you know, fully modern, fully developed, right here, right now. You can buy it off the shelf technology that every community in America could be using to harden themselves and get off their dependence on their local utility. Or do it cooperatively, like they did at Babcock Farms, with the local utility. It worked.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So why did DeSantis wait to respond? And what are we going to do about the Supreme Court? We'll talk about those stories in just a moment.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Jim in Babcock Ranch, Florida, of all places. Hey, Jim, your ears must have been ringing or itching or whatever the phrase is, burning, I guess.
I live in Babcock Ranch, have been here since 2018. We were here for the whole hurricane. And I would say that we caught the eye wall because we had trees were blowing one way for most of the hurricane. And then all of a sudden, the eye wall passes and it goes the other way.
Right.
It was amazing.
So you sustained a direct hit, and your community is intact.
Right. It is intact, and that's great. One of the things that I wanted to bring up had concern with how FPL treats, let's say, my home with home. They limit the amount.
This is Florida Power and Light.
Solar panels I can have. Florida right. Power and Light. They limit the amount of solar panels I can have because they don't want to pay anymore.
Right. They want you to buy solar electricity from their 700,000 panel solar farm that's right next to your community, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and the nice part is it is inside the original Babcock Ranch of 91,000 acres. Mm. So it is about 2 miles up the road from us.
Right, but they're still playing games with you. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. But it works well, and it although we do pay FPL, you know, for our electricity direct to the, but it's a shame that, you know, all the houses down here don't have panels also.
Right. But I understand also that your houses were built mostly one story, fairly low wind profile, so that they wouldn't get blown away by a hurricane. Do I have that right?
Well,
or at least they're built.
There are a number of two stories here, and on my particular street, there are no two stories. So, generally, you know,
but the construction was literally designed to withstand hurricanes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And everybody has done well. We had hurricane windows. They were installed. That's how we bought the house. We wanted it that way. And let me tell you, they had 144 mile winds at the fire department just a mile away.
Wow.
So,
and you came through it just fine. See, this is such a model. It's not like this is a fantasy. There you are living there. Jim, it's great talking with you. Thank you so much for the call, and thanks for validating my premise. I appreciate it. This is interesting. The Attorney General candidate, the Democrat running for Attorney General, Daniel Uhlfelder, has basically spent this last weekend warning people about Ron DeSantis, about what DeSantis was up to. DeSantis, it turns out, knew where the storm was heading as early as Sunday and knew how bad it was going to be and did nothing. And, you know, now that the attorney general candidate, this Democrat, has pointed this out, DeSantis is going, oh, nobody thought it was going to hit Lee County. Yes, they did. Oh, it wasn't even in the cone for Lee County. No, he was lying through his teeth. So here we have DeSantis trying to pull a Trump. He's literally lying about where the hurricane was going in an effort to say, well, no, I just, you know, postponed and procrastinated because, I don't know, we had serious things to attend to. had to come up with another tranche of immigrants in Texas that we could ship to Martha's Vineyard, you know? Well, I mean, obviously he didn't say all those things, but Yulfelder, this is the Democrat running for AG, posted a screen capture of the Lee County government's Twitter account showing the mandatory evacuations for areas near the canals and on the coast. But the governor didn't back it up. Yulfelder explained that Fort Myers is a low-lying city, and ahead of the storm, they were predicting anywhere from 9 to 12-foot storm surges, which would reasonably swallow one-story homes across the area, and they did. So here you had the county saying, get the hell out. But a lot of people, you know, hey, it's just the county. The state hasn't said anything. The governor hasn't said anything. Ron DeSantis is our boy. He's the one who, you know, knows what's going on. He's the guy who tells us what to do. And DeSantis didn't say anything, so we're just going to stay here. And then Tuesday comes, oh, my God, get out of the way. And suddenly people don't have gas in their cars and the roads are jammed. And in fact, there were several roads where people were caught in their cars as the water came up above their cars. And all of this goes to Ron DeSantis. The other big story that I think is worth talking about here is the Supreme Court. A remarkable piece over at Alternet by Alex Henderson. It's titled, Shaken Law Professors Revolt as Hyperpartisan SCOTUS Rulings Upend Constitutional Principles. Elena Kagan recently gave a speech where she talked about how the Supreme Court has ceased to be a court, essentially, and has become an arm of the GOP, of the Republican Party, ideologically. It's become a political arm. And, you know, for generations, the Supreme Court's main job was to uphold civil liberties. I mean, or at least that's what they did. That's what they perceived as their main job. But then, you know, they struck down abortion rights, one of the civil liberties afforded to largely to women. And then Clarence Thomas, Jenny's husband, right-wing conspiracy nut crackpot, in his ruling on Dobbs, said, you know, we really ought to consider Griswold, Lawrence, and Obergefell. Griswold, of course, is Griswold, Lawrence, and Obergefell, basically. Griswold said it's legal for you to have birth control. This was 1965, Griswold versus Connecticut. And in that case, a Connecticut couple, a married couple, sued at the Supreme Court to overturn a Virginia law that said that it was a felony for anybody in Virginia to have birth control, including condoms. See, this is where the GOP is going, is these extreme Catholic laws. And, you know, Griswold overturned that. And then in 1972, the Supreme Court legalized condoms for single people. In Lawrence v. Kansas, the Supreme Court legalized simply having gay relationships, sexual relationships. And in Obergefell, the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage. Now, the one thing that Thomas didn't point out was Loving versus Virginia, which legalized interracial marriage, maybe because that would gore his particular ox. But now we've got this situation where all across America, law school professors are freaking out because they can't teach constitutional law anymore, because the Supreme Court is no longer following the Constitution. They're instead following the dictates of a political party and of Donald Trump. You've got this Tiffany Jeffers, a professor at Georgetown University. She said, it's hard to think about your own profession, the things you were taught, the things you believed in abruptly coming to an end. It's hard to ask a law professor to dismantle all the training they've had. It's difficult, emotional, psychological transformation. It's not easy to upend your life's work and no longer trust the Supreme Court. Another professor at Duke Law School, same thing. I've always perceived the court as a tool for justice. It's honestly hard to know what to say to students entering this profession right now. So what's it going to take before the court gets over?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I personally think that this fall we're going to see a court gutting civil rights and voting rights, and that might be enough to cause Congress to say, okay, 13 people now.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's your media support group for We the People. April in Newark, Delaware. Hey, April, what's on your mind today?
I have been to Babcock Farm. No, Ranch. They call it Babcock Ranch.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm telling you, it was so interesting. And I was there in the March of 2018. And I guess they've really done well. At the time, we were visiting people in Fort Myers who live in the Tony part. I hope their place is okay. And they said, you got to see this place. It's all solar power.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was sort of like being in a science fiction place or on the moon or something. It was very vast and very sort of barren. But everywhere were these poles with solar panels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's in fact, the first caller to the show today was somebody who lives there at Babcock Ranch.
Oh, I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, and he was like, you know, we did not lose power. We did not lose any part of our house. He said the houses are all built with hurricane-resistant glass. They have hurricane windows.
Right, right.
And so, you know, nobody was injured. They had power through the whole thing. They had internet through the whole thing. They have their own water system, and they had water, you know, which is powered by their solar electricity. So they had water through the whole thing. They continue to. Nobody's having a boy. And they're only 12 miles northeast of Fort Myers.
Well,
just
yeah,
got
and the thing of it is, when we were there, people were really questioning whether that place was going to make a go of it.
Really?
And they really thought, you know, they thought, and the homes were kind of strange in a way, but, you know, they did it, and I think it's great.
Yeah.
And also, I have solar power in my house. We built a house about 10 years ago, and they wanted to cut down this huge tulip tree, and we said, we don't want to do that. So we got them to put panels, like, basically all over the different parts of the house. It's kind of crazy. They're in sections. And it's great. We get a check every month, and I'm telling you, I love it.
That's great. That's great. And you're in Delaware.
We're in Delaware, yeah. And we happen to have, they wanted to do the one tree, but we have enough sun from, that would be east, I guess, or something.
Yeah.
But we do have the south and the west and all that to get it from. So
that's great. The one kind of dark moment of the fellow who called, who said he lives in Babcock Farms and has watched the show, or a ranch, and has watched the show for years, is that Florida Power and Electric, which is, or Florida Power and Light, I guess, FPL, who put up the 700,000 panel solar farm, solar area for the community, has been actively discouraging people from putting their own solar on their house. Because as long as people buy solar from the Florida Power and Light solar farm, which is right on the edge of town, the Solar Power and Light can sell solar electricity to the homeowners. Whereas if the homeowners put panels on their own houses, and Florida Power and Light has gotten the DeSantis administration and the Republicans to pass and sign legislation
over the last couple
of years, making it more difficult for individual home. Yeah, this is the Sunshine State. It's more difficult to put solar panels on your roof. It's crazy. I mean, you know, it's just crazy.
That's terrible.
It is the power
really
of a corrupt government and a corrupting
Down there. But anyway, I'm so happy they're making a go of it at that place, though. But it is so weird to sit and have dinner in a little patio and have all these solar lights, like, towering over you. It was just really crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like I was in another world then. I really did.
Yeah.
Anybody that's in that area ought to stop by there.
It's like the town of the future out of the
That's exactly it. It's like some kind of future Jetsons place or something. Yeah.
There you go.
I would say anybody should stop by, and I'm so happy they did well.
Yeah, me too. April, thank you for the call. Michael in Greenville, South Carolina. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Been listening since you took over from Al Franken on Air America. I am a retired Army Staff Sergeant Uber driver. I own two hybrid cars, a CT200H, which is the nice version of your Prius, and a Kia Niro hybrid that I average 50 miles per gallon.
Wow.
The guy that was talking about the batteries, I have over 12,000 passengers in 5 years. Nobody except for one person has ever told me that they had problems with the hybrid batteries.
Right.
And he traded in his Prius for a Kia Niro hybrid.
Right. Right. No, this is the guy who was calling in was spouting the kind of propaganda that the fossil fuel industry has been pumping out through these right-wing think tanks and editing Wikipedia and everything else for years and years and years.
It's
nonsense.
It's absolutely BS. My wife drives her Lexus 200H, and she gets 38 miles per gallon. When I drive it, I get 47. But my Kia, I average 50 miles per gallon.
Yeah, no, that's spectacular, and and you're right. The way you drive has a big influence on it too. Michael, thank you for sharing that. Hack in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hey, Hack, what's on your mind today?
Well, actually, I'm in Albuquerque right now, Calgary.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, what all consumer products have in common when they come on the market toward market and go toward market saturation is the price goes down.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening right now. I mean, you could buy electric cars in the $20,000 range.
And I also have an argument against the electric vehicle haters.
Which is?
Way back in 1903, Wright Brothers had a powered flight for, maybe about a minute or so. And, of course, as we all know, that's the last anybody ever heard of aviation.
Right. Oh, so you see, your point is that at the beginning of the life cycle of a new technology, there's always a relatively brief but difficult period. Is that your point, Herb? Or Hank?
Yeah.
I totally get it. And you're absolutely right. That is a great shutdown. Thank you very much for that. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
The new Supreme Court term begins.
That's right.
And, with some interesting cases, but I'm most concerned about the Moore versus Harper case.
Me too.
With the legislature from North Carolina asking the court to make the determination that because of Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2, which says each state shall appoint as the legislature thereof shall determine or a number of electors. And by that sentence alone, the legislature of North Carolina is arguing that they have total autonomy, free of any of the other branches and checks and balances of government in the state of North Carolina, that being the state Supreme Court or the governor or anything. So so how does the Supreme Court get in on this? Well, there are two issues. First of all, there's Article 2, Section 1, which gives the to answer that question. There's also the fact that the North Carolina Supreme Court has told the legislature that they need to get their gerrymandering lines in keeping with the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act.
Mm.
So
those are federal
laws, so that's the end for the Supreme Court. But there are also a number of abstention doctrines that the federal courts have to not interfere or undermine, or they should defer to state courts.
Yeah, tell us about that in 2000 in Bush v. Gore.
That's right. Well, yeah, they don't really give a crap about that. That's what I'm worried about, that they will just go ahead and say, yeah, the legislature has
right.
Full. And
to split hairs here, Paul, isn't it entirely possible that the intent of that statement in the Constitution is that the legislature shall define by legislation, signed by the governor, how the electoral votes are apportioned? And in fact, every state in the union has done that, has passed a law. There are two outliers, Maine and Nebraska, as I recall, and where they have different parts of the state apportion their electors in different ways. And they basically split the state in half. The legislature has decided. What this legislature is saying is that we should be able to override our own law without passing another law. Isn't that essentially it?
Yeah, that's not splitting hairs. That's exactly what they're trying to do essentially trying to justify the fake electors scheme that says, if we don't like the outcome, and you're exactly right, they can the legislatures, as the legislatures shall determine by the laws of their state, which those are also in check and balance by, as you say, signed by the governor and checked by the state courts. So, they don't get to just to get out of the three branches of government in their state. And I'm worried that this court will. And the reason I'm worried about this is I'm thinking that the conservative right wing is kind of handicapping and telegraphing the court. Well, here's how you should decide. And here's why. I heard a professor of political science from Hillsdale College this morning on another show, basically telling the court how to rule and saying, you know, he said, I don't think the court will rule on racial gerrymandering. They're just going to kind of punt on that because that's a political issue. Well, that's a bunch of bullcrap. Yeah. That's one of the reasons the court has jurisdiction is because it has to do with the Voting Rights Act.
Well, it's only a political issue because you've got one political party that doesn't want black people to vote.
Well, yeah, but that's not the definition of, I won't go into too wonky, but the definition of what is a political issue
is a different thing.
That's not what it's not what's meant. And it definitely does, because it involves race, does get strict scrutiny under the doctrines that we already have established, equal protection doctrine.
I agree. But the bottom line is, Paul, this court is no respecter of precedent or law. And my question is, you know, what's it going to take for a broad consensus in America to emerge that something needs to be done about the court? I don't think we're there yet, but I think we're heading in that direction. Paul, I got to run. Thanks for your call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Will it take blowing up our voting rights? Will it take further eroding, you know, our right to be protected from gun violence? What's it going to take? Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Rick in Huntington Beach, California. Hey, Rick.
Just worried about the fact that the Democrats are...
Hey, Rick.
Just worried about the fact that the Democrats are about to lose the election that should be over already in their favor. They're doing 2016 all over again.
How so?
They're being so arrogant. Myself and a number of my friends across the country have been trying to reach out to just help, okay? Mm-hmm. Just reach. I've reached out to everything from the Democratic Committee of Orange County all the way up to people running for the Senate, to the Democratic National Committee, and the 15 or 20 people I've tried to reach, one group set me back a thing saying, we'll talk to you if you'll be a phone banker, but nothing else. Mm. And the other person invited me to a group, to a meeting, which was supposed to be a meeting. And all it was a meeting in a parking lot that sent you out to canvas without telling you that.
Hmm.
And nobody else has responded at all. My notes have been everything from, hey, I'd like to help. Call me.
Or Rick, you need to run for precinct committee person and get inside this party and change it.
I'm a little bit too old for that, but I'd love to be able to get to.
Well, there are some groups that are doing a lot of great on the ground work. One is indivisible.org. The other is, there's a lot of stuff being organized over at dailycos.com.
Yeah, Indivisible, I'll try. But the thing is, the reason Republicans win a lot of times is the fact that they get all their people saying the same thing. Lock her up.
Right.
Socialism.
Right.
Anti-cop.
Right.
Democrats have,
Death
the
matters.
Republicans have given the Democrats that for this election, and not just abortion, about a whole lot of other things.
Yep.
And with, you know, I grant you, I only have 40 years of experience working with everybody from mom and pops as marketing up to governments.
I'm
so
listening.
I may not know very much,
yeah.
But if you get people to say the same thing, you get
repetition,
like,
is
Coke.
The key to belief. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Rick, thank you. Thank you, and good luck. Chris in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, it says you disagree with me that you don't think that OPEC is planning on raising prices in order to influence the election. Tell me about it.
I agree that that OPEC is cutting production. Is that that's what you?
Yeah, well, that's what they're predicting for the Wednesday meeting. Russia has already said that
that's
they want OPEC to cut production.
That is unfortunate, and I don't know about what information you have about Trump and anybody else that's working directly with either OPEC and or Russia to help participate in this cut in production in order to hurt.
Oh, you don't need. Yeah, you know, Donald Trump doesn't need to call up Saudi Arabia and say, "Hey, raise the price of oil." You've got an entire political party that has launched a nationwide political campaign that they pretty much pulled back on in the last few weeks, saying that high gas prices were the fault of Joe Biden. He had, you know, stickers, "I did that," you know, appearing on gas pumps. He actually had ads being run by Republican candidates using high gas prices as the key to their ads. So here now you have OPEC and Russia getting together, you know, Saudi Arabia and Russia, good friends of Trump and the Republicans, saying, "Yeah, we're going to get together, raise the price of oil." Why? What's not to love if you're a Republican? I get it, Chris. You want Americans screwed. That's the Republican way, right?
I'm an independent actually, but suppose that's true. Why do we have limited supply? Why do we have limited supply in our reserves?
Because demand has exploded since the end of the pandemic.
Okay, let's say that's true as well. Supply and demand. Are you your argument on supply and demand is not even coherent then.
All right. Well, Chris, you know, I can't explain it because I'm hitting the end of the break here. This is the end of the hour.
I appreciate the call. And listen, hopefully we could come together as Americans. And lastly, because I do fear that we're so divided that
would be
that it's going to be a bad place.
Chris, I got to run, but I'm with you. Thank you. Mike in Chicago. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was calling because I hope the Democrats can get ahead of the crisis that the Republicans are predicting. You know, like, we'll never see this kind of thing again. Do they have the National Guard, the Democrats, on standby? Also, the polling places, like DeSantis has a private army, which he's going to send out to the polling places to make sure that things are fair. We need to have the National Guard there to make sure that that doesn't happen. And here in Illinois, I live outside of Chicago. This is a blue state, but they're closing 40% of the polling places in the city of Chicago. I'd like to see buses do a round robin going from where they're.
Now, this is a democratically controlled state, Pat. Might it be that they're closing the polling places because so many people are opting to vote by mail?
No, because a lot of them are in the inner city. So I don't think those folks are mailing stuff in. But I'd like to see buses going round robin from the closed polling place to an open one, and that nationwide all day long. They could have a series of buses just going, picking up people, dropping them off so that they could get to the polling places. Yeah. And lastly, I'd like to see them get rid of DeJoy because he's over the post office.
Yeah, welcome.
We have one lady that Lauren Underwood, and she always wins by mail-in vote. Now, if they can't get him out so that they can get this mail through in a timely fashion, she could lose.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that the Democrats wake up and smell the coffee. Don't wait until there's a riot and people breaking into the Capitol to say, "Oh, my, we're in trouble." You know, they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. We have an ongoing attempted fascist coup in the United States. It has not backed off. It has not slowed down. It suffered a setback on January 6th, but they've turned that into an organizing opportunity. So it's a time that we all need to be paying attention and we all need to be active. Pat, thank you very much. Well said. Brenda in Springfield, Ohio. Hey, Brenda, what's on your mind today?
I'm calling about putting solar on top of my roof. I looked at it here in Ohio, and it was going to be for 25 years for $30,607. Mm-hmm. It was a great interest rate, 2.99%, but I just couldn't afford that. I mean, I'm 68 now. I live on, you know, my Social Security and a little bit of a retirement income from the Air Force. And I had to turn it down.
Yeah.
as much as I wanted to go green, I am with a carrier here in Ohio that's supposedly giving me clean energy. But I'm paying a little bit of a higher rate than
same here in Portland. Well, this is a reality that many older people are facing, Brenda, which is that, you know, it typically takes about at least a decade for a solar system to pay for itself, depending on how large it is and how much it reduces your electric bills on a monthly basis.
Right.
You know, I mean, Louise and I looked at solarizing our house. The big problem we had is that we don't have a south-facing roof. We've got it's a whole long story, but it just, you know, the house isn't appropriate for it, sadly. But had we done it, then, you know, really the benefits would be 20, 30 years down the road, or at least 20 years down the road, when probably we will not be in that house if we're even still on this earth. So, you know, this is a challenge. On the other hand, stepping into this space now, and you might want to look around for this, there are companies that will come out and install solar on your house, and they own it. And they basically become your utility instead of your local power company. They install the solar on your house. They charge you a monthly fee, which is typically a little less, 10, 20, sometimes 30% less than what you're paying for electricity right now. But you're still paying them because they own all your solar equipment. But you're paying less than you are right now. And electric bills are, you know, from these companies that are using fossil fuels are only going to go up over time. That's certainly been the historic trend. And so it's a good way to get solar and lock in the benefits. And then at the end of the lifetime of the solar system, you know, at the end of 10 or 20 years, typically, just like when you lease a car, there's a buyout and you can buy the system for pennies on the dollar. So that's something to look at, Brenda. I don't know what might be available in your part of Ohio, but I do know that that kind of thing is popping up all over the country. Brenda, thank you for the call. Fernando in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Fernando, thanks for listening to WMNF. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, thanks for having my call. I just want to say thank you for your work. I'm glad to be back and be able to listen to you on this Monday after the hurricane. I was in Tampa. I evacuated safely to Central Florida, and luckily everything was fine. But I know a lot of people in Fort Myers. I have family in Fort Myers that are going through horrible stuff, and specifically my sister. She's a school teacher, and I just wanted to bring attention to the difference in the response where Hillsborough County here in Tampa versus the Fort Myers Lee County. And there's a lot of people upset, you know, specifically, for example, on Monday, everybody evacuated the previous Monday, a week ago, from Tampa. The city of Tampa did mandatory zoning evacuations, whereas Lee County, my sister, a teacher, was forced, just like most people, to show up to work on Monday, expecting that the hurricane was going to be closer towards Tampa.
Whoa.
So I just wanted to bring that up in attention because somebody ought to be held responsible.
Yeah, like Ron DeSantis. Your sister's okay, Fernando?
Yes, sir. Okay. She was stuck there. I let her stay at my house here for the past few days, but she just went back there and everything. It's a disaster zone out there. So.
Oh, man. It's so sad. Well, you know, I mean, it is a rebuilding opportunity, but it's difficult to look at the possible upside of really, really bad events when they're happening. I totally get it. Fernando, I'm so sorry to hear about your sister. And thank you for calling in, and thanks for checking in with us. It's nice to hear that you're doing well. Lou in Pueblo, Colorado. Hey, Lou, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I got a comment on the Supreme Court. I think I have an answer. I did some research back to 1950. And let's look at unanimous decisions. Generally, we all support unanimous decisions. The Warrenberger Court and the Earl Warren Court averaged 50 unanimous decisions a year, or they were both in for 16, 17 years. This court, the Kremlin Court, has been averaging about 20. But since they put in those unqualified felons, they're up to 300 unanimous decisions a year. The reason for that, it cranks up. There's a thing that the legal people look at, how many yes votes versus no, and it cranks up that percentage. Well, generally we agree with unanimous decisions. We know Congress won't do anything unless they're bribed or they gain power. Well, if we were to require all decisions to be unanimous, Congress gains power, and they both gain power, so I think they might support it.
Congress could make that. Congress could change that rule. They could change. Right now, the threshold for a majority opinion with the Supreme Court is 50% plus one. You know, and there's an odd number of people on the court, you know, 9 people on the court, so that's basically 5 people. Congress could very easily say it's got to be 2/3, you know, which would be 6 or 7, I guess. I have to do the math on that. I don't know which.
Make it unanimous.
Or unanimous, yeah. Make it a consensus court. And I have, I was going to say I have no problem with that. I'm thinking of.
Well,
go ahead.
Take a look, Tom, at the unanimous decisions. I read about 20 or 30 of them. I totally agreed with every one of them. I don't think you'd find anyone, you know, in the unanimous decisions, they're actually doing what the Constitution says they're supposed to do.
Right.
That's the only time they do it.
Right. Yeah. It's an interesting question, Lou, because there's a bunch of different ways that Congress can regulate the court. And of course, Article 3, Section 2 simply says, you know, the court shall operate under regulations specified by Congress. And you know, typically the way that they've regulated the court is setting the court's budget, setting the number of people on the court, that sort of thing. But they certainly could say, you know, you must have, if it was unanimous, you could have one person who just constantly blows up the court. You know, like Clarence Thomas, he was the one guy who voted not to force Donald Trump to turn over documents to the federal government, because of course those documents might have included stuff about his wife. But you could have basically one troll blowing up everything. I do think though that a supermajority, I mean, that would be a smaller change to the court, one that most Americans wouldn't even understand the consequences of. I don't think it would be a huge explosive political event like raising the number of justices to the court to 11 or 13. Which is frankly what I think they should do.
But you can't take away power from the either political party or you will never get any support in Congress. They have to either be bribed. They have to be bribed with either money or power. This way increases both parties' power.
Yeah.
By limiting the Supreme Court, so it actually gets support.
Yeah, it may well. It may well. And I would add that I think the other thing that will provoke a change in the court, and has in the past, is the public being outraged. I mean, this is what happened after Dred Scott. Yeah, after 1856, yeah. Dred Scott, when Chief Justice Roger Taney said, Taney said, black people are the property of white people everywhere in the country. And Abraham Lincoln just said, you know, I'm going to ignore that decision except for poor Mr. Dred Scott. He's got to go along with it. You're telling me it was the right answer. Lou, I got to run, but thank you for the call. So what's it going to take for Americans to rise up against the court?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's happened 3 times by 2 presidents in the past, but I'm not holding my breath right now. I do think, though, that more of these wackadoodle decisions, and you're going to see a lot more pressure.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Tyrone in Harlem, New York. Hey, Tyrone. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's on your mind today?
Thanks for taking my call, Tom. Yeah, I like you said, expanding the court. I was watching this CNN special about the court and about what Theodore Roosevelt had to threaten to be able to have the justices recognize that they were on the wrong path. Because he threatened to expand the court to 15, and they knew he wasn't playing. But our problem is, it seems that we got to have the hands around our throat before they realize that they're trying to kill us. Because these people, they already expressed that they're going after birth control, they're going after the LGBTQ, they're going after the stuff that they're saying that don't specifically say. The Supreme Court, the Constitution don't specifically say this is what we're here to protect. We're going to try to take that away. I won't be surprised if they try to bring back Fugitive Slave Act or some of those craziness.
Well, I think the most dangerous thing they're going to do, Tyrone, is they're going to try and make it easy to sue journalists. They're going to make it, and they're going to make it easy for government to regulate news. This is what fascist governments always do. It's one of their first steps, and this court is a fascist court.
So only way we can get out of it is by expand the court, because I don't see any other way around this, because these people don't see, they're not going to see the light, you know, or have an epiphany and say, oh, no, we were going down the wrong path. That is not going to happen. We could throw that out the window. And until we realize what we're up against and recognize that these people mean business and they mean to send us back to the 1950s or 40s or when this country was so-called great, when only a certain amount of people had rights to do whatever they want to do when they want to do it, we're going to continue down this road of self-destruction.
Yeah.
Because this is where we're going.
Yep, I'm with you. Tyrone, thank you. Spot on. Rob in Eastern North Carolina. Hey, Rob, what's up?
My family goes way back with my father was a Ford Lincoln Mercury dealer, and I worked for Ford. And look, the automobile manufacturers in the United States, Tom, have been producing all-electric cars for 20 years, and people vote with their dollars when they buy a product of a car, just like they vote, you know, for the politicians they want when we have elections. There's never been a general acceptance of EV cars or trucks in the in the market. It's been never been above 2.5-3%, and most people don't realize that you have to replace the batteries, lithium battery packs, about every 9 to 10 years. And you can go into a registered Chevrolet dealer with a Volt when you have to do that after about 10 or 11 years. And they can charge you, it costs sometimes up to $15,000 to $18,000 to $20,000.
Try $4,000 or $5,000.
Now, another thing, well,
that's what those batteries are selling for now. Yeah, no, the batteries are the battery packs are $3,000 to $4,000 plus installation.
Okay,
but that's not what you call about,
this.
Rob.
Say I had a magic wand, Tom, and I could wave it, and 50% of the people in the United States tomorrow will wake up with an EV in their driveway. Now, what do you think would happen in 2 days when they plug them in to charge them? First thing would do is the infrastructure, the grid, so-called electric grid in the United States would melt down, and then it would go.
Not even remotely true, Rob.
No, that is true.
No, it's
that
not even remotely true. An electric vehicle.
We have enough energy under our feet in the United States that if we opened up ANWR and we had permitting like it was,
Rob, this is nonsense. An electric vehicle, if you plug it in with a 110 volt charger like I use at home, is drawing the amount of electricity of a hairdryer. And if everybody in the country turned on a hairdryer for 4 or 5 hours, to the equivalent, to charge their car, or overnight when there's an abundant amount of cheap electricity, it would not cause any kind of crisis to our electric grid. So number one, your point is just simply wrong. Back to you, Rob.
He's going to blackmail Europe and EU if we go back temporarily on a wartime footing and produce energy. We could send it to Europe and save them, and we could help stop this terrible war that's going on in Ukraine. I don't care what you think about your opinion, left, right, or center. That is the truth. And you have a nice day. I appreciate you taking my call.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Rob. Tom in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I was calling about the woman who had called earlier about recommendations for solar. And
yeah.
I'm a recent recipient. I live in Northern Illinois. I have bought solar panels in 2019. I chose to buy them because when I looked at return on investment, in my particular case, and I do have a south-facing part of the roof, my return on investment for the price of my house, the value of my house, I got back in about 2 years.
Wow.
Because I own. And it was considered to be a benefit because
the solar panels increase the value of your house in addition to reducing your electric bill.
Right now, but if you rent them like you were suggesting, which is a something my brother did, the negative aspect of that is that you don't get all the financial benefits from the rebates and things like that,
right.
But also it becomes a liability if you choose to sell the house. If you live in a house for the length of the time that they have to be up there, which I think the contract is 15 years, depending on the company. Like I was looking at the one from Sunrun, which is one of the companies that are up there. In that case, it becomes a financial liability.
Why? Because you'd be selling the house with a cheaper electric system than the power company coming off the grid. Why would it be a liability?
They're also obligated to produce a certain amount of electricity. When they expect a certain return on their investment, so they're expected to for so many kilowatt hours be generated over the course of the year.
Right.
Even with mine that I own. I mean, one of the things that I was able to do when I got mine, and this is just ballpark, the system cost just under $30,000 to install.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was able to get roughly one-third of it back through federal tax credits. And I was also get about another third back because in Illinois they have what's called solar renewable energy credits, and I can sell those. But I'm
that's great.
To produce.
That's great. So Tom, I got to run. I'm sorry, we're out of time here. But thank you for the call and thanks for the update on that. We need to do this nationwide. We really do.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
There's a couple of other stories that I just wanted to highlight for you. One is a major big deal. And it's not being discussed in the media. I mean, people are talking right now about Trump's racist attacks on Mitch McConnell's wife, and that's pretty mind-boggling. And his death threat against Mitch McConnell. I mean, what we are watching is the rise of naked fascist rhetoric and the collapse of rational political rhetoric. But more importantly, I haven't seen a single Republican call out Trump for his racist attack on Elaine Chao. Not one. Have you? I mean, it just looks like the entire Republican Party is scared to death of this man, which is crazy. Okay, but I wanted to get into this other, what's going on with OPEC. On Wednesday, OPEC is going to be holding a meeting. It's OPEC Plus. This is OPEC with the group's de facto leader is Saudi Arabia, but they've got Russia in there now. And Russia and Saudi Arabia are both looking at the Biden administration and saying, you know, we'd really rather have Donald Trump. Or any other Republican, because Republicans love fascists and Democrats don't. And so on Wednesday, they are going to cut their production. Now, Saudi Arabia has already cut their production by 100,000 barrels a day. They did this just last month as a middle finger to Joe Biden. But now we're talking about further cuts. This was announced yesterday, and today, oil prices in Europe and the United States rose 4%. We're already seeing gas above $5 a gallon here in Oregon. They say it's because there's a refinery problem, but hey, it's popping up all over the country. I believe that these guys are, this is going to be part of their October surprise. And it wouldn't surprise me if Jared Kushner, who's got a $2 billion deal with the Saudis and is talking to them all the time, and God only knows how much money they gave Donald Trump that he put in his offshore accounts, that these guys are talking to the Saudis and saying, hey, let's work together to cripple Biden. I mean, we got to get gas prices up above $5 a gallon to make this happen nationwide. And the Saudis are just all gung-ho on this. Oil inventories right now, by the way, are at very low levels, meaning that the market will respond to this very quickly. The New York Times said a sizable cut by Saudi Arabia would appear to be an act of defiance of the Biden administration. I would go beyond that. I would say it's an act of sabotage of the Biden administration. I've got to tell you what's going on in the UK. It'll take just a moment. Liz Truss backing down on her 45% tax rate. Major U-turn. Is it going to last? What's going on here? Is trickle-down economics dead?
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.